from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made starting September 14th at the Rochester Fringe Festival. By now, the Fringe needs a little introduction, we assume, but just in case you're not familiar, it's a festival that brings a diversity of shows and ideas to stages large and small. I mean, sometimes really small. Shows have been performed in cars, street corners. There are indoor shows, outdoor shows, shows in tents, shows on the sides of buildings, fiction, music, reenactments, comedy, physical demonstrations. We're just getting started. This hour, we wonder what Connections would sound like if it were actually a Fringe show. And this is about as close as we're going to get. It's our preview, and you're about to meet many of the people behind the shows. We've got a packed studio and a really fun hour in store for you. Erica Fee is the producer of the KeyBank Rochester Fringe Festival. Nice to have you back. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine. Don't worry about me.
Okay. I'm always thinking about others. That's my problem.
Yes. Well, we're getting close here. And I said off the top that Fringe needs little introduction, but why don't you back it up? How many years now?
Sure. So we're going into our sixth festival this year. Of course, this year is also the 70th anniversary of Fringe festivals worldwide. So we all, many of us from Team Fringe, just came back from the Edinburgh Fringe, where there was a big celebration of 70 years of Fringe.
And 70 years of Fringe, Rochester has been one of the most prominent ones in this country. Still the case?
That's right. We're one of the biggest Fringe festivals in the United States.
Okay. And Can we quantify in any really reliable way exactly how many shows we're going to see?
Well, we have 533 performances this year, but who's counting? compared to, say, though, the Edinburgh Fringe, which we just got back from, they have about 55,000 performances throughout the entire month of August.
55,000 in Edinburgh?
Mm-hmm,
533
yeah.
here? Yeah. We've got room to grow. But 533 in Rochester is still significantly larger than, and that's not to diss other fringe festivals in this country, but that's a big one for this country, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. We are one of the top three biggest. There are some other big ones like Orlando Fringe, Hollywood Fringe, but we're one of the biggest, definitely.
Okay, so Let me just ask a few questions before we meet many of the performers. And Erica, you know, with 533 performances, we're going to meet a lot this hour. There's a lot of fun things happening. But what's going on with the core of it? You got a tent. How's it going? You know, we've had some foibles in the past getting it here. How's it going?
That's right. Yeah, everything seems to be going basically okay for right now, but I don't want to count my chickens before they're hatched.
Everything's going basically okay.
Yeah. I don't want to, you know, Fringe is an interesting festival. We're a bifurcated festival, meaning that we curate half the festival, we meaning the Fringe, and the remainder of the shows, the other half, are curated by the venues themselves. So as a result of that, we're able to bring in so many different groups, have a real diversity of genres, everything from theater to comedy to music to dance to projection to children's entertainment, and shows that can't even be classified. So we have a huge range of performances that will be occurring in Rochester in September for 10 days. And with any time that you plan any sort of event with 533 performances, of course there's going to be bumps along the way, but we're doing pretty well right now. And like I said, we're going into our sixth year, so we've got it down.
What do you hope the city looks like during Fringe? And is it approaching what you dreamed it would be when you started this?
Well, yes, it's approaching what we dreamed it would be, but it can always improve. You know, we really are hoping that in future it becomes very much a powerhouse Northeast festival, so that we're not just drawing in people from the Rochester area and Western New York, but we're drawing in people from the whole of the Northeast. That's our goal for the future. But we do find that Fringe is just such a vibrant experience for those 10 days. We have everyone from, as we say, the young to the young at heart. So participating in Fringe is very much a mindset, and it's just a very energetic, fun time to be in downtown Rochester.
Well, let's meet some of the people behind some of the shows, and I'm going to start with Fred Beam. And Fred is with Sunshine 2.0, NTID theater troupe. Sunshine 2.0's performances are a combination of movement, sign language, physical theater, and other physical elements. So Fred is here, and Fred, it is wonderful to have you here. We'll also say hello to interpreters. Darren Ladson is here with us. You'll hear his voice. And Lynn, I think we got Lynn on doing the interpreting work as well. So Fred, it's great to have you. Thank you for being here. How are you?
Thank you so much. And I'm happy to be here.
Tell me about the performance that you'll have for us at Fringe Festival.
Okay, so we have a performance group, a performance troupe. We're going to have some poetry there, some storytelling, some creative movement, and also some songs that all of that will be produced and expressed in American Sign Language. And it's really accessible for all individuals, as you said, from the young at heart to the actual young. And so it's just pretty much bringing that expressive, that lively expressiveness here on Earth, right? And so you have the interesting combination of the engineering and the science combined with the art on the stage, live on the stage.
When are we going to see these performances? I think we have a guide in front of us just in case. Erica Fee, do you have it as well?
I do.
Okay, you've got one as well. But Fred, when are we going to be able to see you?
September 15th.
Okay, September 15th.
At 9 p.m.
9 p.m. All of these things, by the way, you can check out rochesterfringe.com. Is it rochesterfringe.com, Erica Fee?
That's right. It's rochesterfringe.com. And also at the website, you can purchase all your tickets in advance if it is a ticketed show. About a third of our shows are actually free. But in addition, there's also a listing of all the places that you can pick up our giant 120-page festival guide.
And by the way, September 15th, 8 p.m. at the Little Theater. So that's wonderful to hear. Fred, what excites you most about performing with the Fringe Festival?
Well, actually, I'm just excited really for my actors. I'm actually just the coordinator of the group, and we have four performers in the group. One is Ronnie, Bradley, Katie Muller is the second person. The third person is Antoine Hunter, and then the last person we have is Hayden Orr. And so we have these four performers who will be engaged, and it's a variety that will be expressed. And so there are many different skills. There's dancers coming from many different backgrounds, and we have sign songs and many other things that will be there expressed. And it's going to be a dynamic performance for the community.
It's important for me to ask, for those who are considering coming out to the performance, as you say, sign songs, and for performances that may be a new kind of performance for a hearing audience, for example. I know you want this to be for everybody. What is the experience like for those who haven't seen this kind of performance?
I always tell people that when hearing individuals watch any type of performance, it's usually based on what you hear, right? And so when you're coming to watch our performance, it will be based on what you see. And so you're basically hearing with your ears. That's what people are used to, but we suggest people that if you can, to hear with your eyes as well. And usually that applies also to the deaf community. We are used to hearing with our eyes, and so you get that equal access, right? You'll have deaf individuals who will be able to hear with their eyes. And it's equal access for everybody. When deaf people laugh, hearing people will be laughing at the same time. So it's a wonderful collaborative experience.
What a beautiful answer. Have a great time. We will see you at the Little Theater on September 15th. Thank you, Fred, for being here and for sharing the story of what's coming up with you. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
And Eric Afia, he talks about how inclusive and how much fun it is for all audiences. Fringe, when you meet the various people just this hour, which is just a small slice of what's going on at Fringe, this is a super inclusive, wide-ranging festival, isn't it?
It definitely is. We really think of Fringe as a mindset. It doesn't really matter what your background is. It just matters where you have arrived.
All right, well, let's meet another person who is here with us in studio. Hello to Gene Smith. Hi, Gene.
Hello, hi.
Gene is with Desert Rhythms Middle Eastern Dance Troupe, and Gene's got a chance to tell us about what's coming up with your work, so go ahead.
Okay, well, we are Rochester's actually very original first belly dance troupe. Our group has been in existence for over 30 years, but we are putting on an hour performance, and we do a lot of our dances to unique Arabic music. We will be using props such as swords, veils, wings, zills, the finger cymbals, and we have a very dynamic show planned.
difference between belly dancing across cultures? Help me understand, because I know sometimes you'll hear about a performance and you'll say, well, what kind of belly dancing are we seeing?
We do kind of our own interpretation, Little Turkish, fusion type. We are not really, really tribal or cabaret. There's different elements depending on what country the origins are from. So we do an Americanized type of belly dance.
It is September 16th, 12:30 p.m. at School of the Arts.
Yes.
In their ensemble theater. It's Desert Rhythms Middle Eastern Dance Troupe. How many people involved with them?
We have eight ladies. Mm-hmm. Eight ladies that perform, and diverse group of women who just love the music and the art form, and we are very excited to put on a very good show.
Had a friend years ago get into belly dance and said, you have no idea how physically taxing it is until you try it. Is that true?
Yeah, it is true. It's very good exercise.
very good exercise. When did you start, by the way?
I started actually in 1980. I took a class at Adult Education at night and just kind of on a whim thinking, oh, this sounds fun. You know, I wonder what this is about. And I've never stopped. So.
And what do you think the audiences get out of that? Is it part culture? Is it fun? You know, take me through what the audience experiences.
Yeah, you see culture. You see the authentic music that you're hearing. You're seeing us perform with props. And most of all, you see all of us ladies having a really great time together dancing. And, you know, that projects to the audience and they're enthusiastic watching us.
It is, again, September 16th, Desert Rhythms, 12:30 p.m. at School of the Arts Ensemble Theater. You guys ready to go, yeah?
Yeah, we're ready. We're practicing hard.
Great fun. Thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you so much.
RochesterFringe.com. You want to jump in there, Erica Fee?
That's right. So you can purchase your tickets already to Desert Rhythms. They're already available. They've been on sale since middle of July. And it's great for our tickets, actually, because they download all to your smartphone, or you can print them out at home.
And what's the breakdown of shows? Free shows, ticketed shows? How's that work?
Out of approximately 533 performances, we have about a third of them are totally free. The rest, though, are relatively low cost. We do advise to our venues that the top price for a ticket should be around $18. So we do try to create an experience where people can afford to spend an evening downtown sampling more than one show.
All right, let's meet Anderson Poetically Undefined Allen and Shaq Payne. They're spoken wordsmiths of starving artists, and the show is Anatomy of a Black Man, September 22nd, 10 p.m. at the Muck. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. How are you?
Awesome. How are you?
Very good.
Doing well.
Well, and tell me about what Anatomy of a Black Man is.
So you have an experience between two black men where they are addressing, you know, social issues such as toxic masculinity, racism, and brotherhood, essentially. And you get to see the experiences that we kind of go through trying to be, you know, positive role models in society, you know, and just working through a lot of different nuances that comes from, you know, just living in a very patriarch-like society.
So you decided to tackle small themes.
Yeah.
Yes.
some of the biggest themes in society. How long is the show?
75 minutes.
So that's 75 minutes. And so just the two of you, yes?
Yes.
And so how did you write the show? Shaq, what's the process like when you want to tackle huge themes like this and you want to fit it into 75 minutes? How do you write a show like this?
Well, really what we did was we started off with the paper. just like, okay, so we want to do this. Well, we actually have an original script of Anatomy of a Black Man that is an hour and 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. So there's, we made a specific version for Fringe where we updated some pieces and took a lot of it out to keep the essential. But really, we just sat down in our living room and was like, okay, so this is how many pieces we have. This is where we can stop. So we have to figure it out how to really chop and keep the story structure essential to certain pieces and certain themes that needed to be in there.
When it comes to the subject of what is manhood, I mean, in any community, that's a question that is going to have different answers from different people. I'm curious to know how you decide to address that and what it means to you. Shaq, I'll start with you. What is manhood?
Manhood to me is really, I would say being able to stand in the truth of who you are, being able to manifest for not only you, but the people around you, family, community, and also being able to lead and exemplify the things that you've learned for the people around you as well. So people have an example on what to do or what to look for or what to aspire to be.
And Shaq, what do you think people get wrong when they think about defining manhood?
A lot of the times people think manhood, they immediately think provider, and provider is then related to money. So it's like, okay, so to be a man, I got to be able to make money. I got to be able to pay the bills of the house. I got to be like the head honcho. Mm-hmm. And really, I guess with Anatomy of a Black Man, you watch two black men really struggle through trying that and understanding that that is not what manhood is and having to redefine that for themselves. And really encapsulate and make their own definition of what manhood is.
And I admire this so much. I'm curious to know for you, you know, I think the easy thing to do is to kind of adopt basic common societal ideas on what anything is, whether it's manhood, anything else. How did you discover sort of that about yourself, that that's how you view manhood and you know, kind of awaken to that when it probably would have been easier to go in a different direction?
A lot of mistakes, honestly.
A lot of mistakes.
I can say, like, I've tried that whole, okay, making a bunch of money and trying to make the material things and finding love, quote unquote, and trying to make that work. And you kind of get to this point where it's just like, this isn't it. I need something more. What is beyond this need for money? What is beyond? Why do I need these things? What is it that I actually want in my person? And I think that started like my quest for true manhood.
So Anderson, we talked about what manhood is. You also used the term toxic masculinity. So what does that term mean to you?
Well, for me, it's really just an individual or a male who stands at a place of, you know, dominance, and you want to kind of perpetuate certain stigmas along the lines of misogyny, anything of that sort. So me, just in my person, I've always been told as a man that showing emotion or being overly expressive is, you know, it's weak. It's a sign of weakness to be that. And I never understood that, because my feelings, I feel like they matter. You know, I feel like they mean something to, if they should mean anything to somebody, they mean something to me, you know? And I feel like just being vulnerable, in a sense, you don't get to see men do that a lot. And that's what you get to see a lot in the show. And it's rare that you actually see that happen with two, you know, men actually be vulnerable with each other and share their struggles.
Absolutely. And I'm going to call it back to a conversation we had just recently on this program about, you know, sort of understanding the differences between men and women, and how a lot of people assume, well, that's just the biological difference. Men do certain things and behave certain ways. Women do certain things and behave certain ways. You seem to be really challenging some of that it doesn't have to be, it's not in our DNA to act in ways that you view as kind of toxic.
Exactly. I truly believe a huge part of manhood is protecting the woman, protecting the village, essentially, you know, the woman, the child, and understanding how just important the value of a woman is, you know. That for me is a huge part of manhood. I've watched in so many instances, you know, men sully women so much or slander them and, you know, kind of demean their value. But we wouldn't be here without a woman. We wouldn't be, you know, who we are without women. And that's, I can say for me, I can't speak for everybody, but I know in a lot of my experiences that a woman has always been a huge inspiration behind what we do as men.
Anderson and Shaq are doing Anatomy of a Black Man September 22nd, 10 p.m. at the MUC, the Multi-Use Cultural Community Center on Atlantic. And so part of the Fringe Festival, I'll ask both real quickly before we turn to our next guest. What do you want audience to get out of this? What do you hope after 75 minutes people are walking out with, Anderson?
Well, the first time we did the show, I really want people to feel the transformation that we underwent, but also just taking that ride with us, you know, and seeing what it is that we go through.
Shaq?
I want them to soak in the experience and then have a conversation about it.
Where are you going to be on September 22nd at 10 p.m.? After this conversation, I think you're going to be at the MUC. It's Anatomy of a Black Man. And are you going to be able to get tickets, ticketed event, Eric Fee?
Yeah, that's right. They're already on sale now at RochesterFringe.com.
RochesterFringe.com. Thank you, gentlemen. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And we'll see you at September 22nd. This is our Fringe Festival preview, RochesterFringe.com. And this hour, the producer of the KeyBank Rochester Fringe Festival, Eric Fee, is here. And you are meeting and hearing from a lot of the performers, the creators, the artists, the talent behind 533 different performances that start September 14th. And Ted Baumhauer is with Flower City Vaudeville. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Vaudeville, this is, you love this question, don't you? Vaudeville's still alive, right? Oh, man.
With
what a
few
cliche.
Of us.
What
oh, yeah.
No. I asked that only because there's a fun throwback nature to it, but for some modern audiences, you need a definition again. So what's vaudeville?
Well, vaudeville is what existed in the entertainment world before there were movies. So think about the 1880s, 1890s. Vaudeville did survive in some form till the 1940s and then sort of disappeared and then it's back. It's variety entertainment. Could be singing, could be dancing, could be the juggler, could be what you saw on the Ed Sullivan show with the guy spinning the plates and to the saber dance. It could be almost anything.
Ted, do you fear that we're losing a little bit of that live entertainment feel in modern America here?
We're probably losing some with, as I have my three children working out their thumbs on their iPhones. But, you know, when we get in front of audiences, it's a type of entertainment because especially when we do our show, there is no fourth wall. We're connecting with the audience all the time. So everybody, including ourselves, walks out. We had a great time. We enjoyed the time we had together.
All right. And you put a show together, you know, a lot of different elements. It's, as you said, a lot of different things that you could be doing. How do you decide how you want to compose a show?
Well, what we do is the three of us. So there's Ward Hartenstein, who's a gifted musician, percussionist, and plays a variety of instruments. And then Rich Hewson, who is sort of like, for those of us on the older scale, like a Red Skelton kind of clown. No grease paint or anything like that. So, and then I'm the skills person. So if it's juggling or slacklining or riding a unicycle or something like that, we look at what the three of us can do and we see where those crossroads are and we sort of build a routine or a show around those intersections.
Who are the best vaudevillers in history?
The best vaudevillers in history. Well, I mean, you can go back to folks like Al Jolson. Bob Hope got his start there. Gracie and Allen. There's just so many. It's hard to say who were the top ones.
And the skills person, you have an important job. What are the of all the different skills that you do? What was the hardest to learn, and what does any of that stuff make you nervous when you're performing it?
Well, the one that still makes me that I do perform when we can bring in my hammock is I do walk a slack line on a hammock stand. And I juggle knives while I'm on it, and I'm working on spinning a ball while I'm doing
as
that.
As one does.
As, you know, it's just what I do. I have to admit that still makes me a little bit nervous, which is good because the chains do clink against the side posts and make a nice little nervous noise.
Well, and Ted, look, we just heard Shaq say, you know, one of the things that helped craft his show is making mistakes, learning from mistakes. If you make mistakes juggling knives, it's hard to juggle knives in the future.
Well, the juggling the knives isn't the hardest thing. On the slack line, then it becomes harder. I've never shared this story with my wife, but the first time I tried it on the hammock, I was only aware of bouncing off the floor. I don't remember hitting the floor. And doing a quick body scan, I noticed that I had all three knives in my hands and nothing was broken. So that was a success. And it took about 2 months before I got back on it and tried it again.
That's great. And so lastly, for Ted Baumhauer, Flower City Vaudeville, what's the advice for people who want to juggle knives? How do you do this without losing a digit?
Know how to juggle clubs really well.
Start
before.
With clubs.
Yes,
start with other
yes,
things.
Yes, yes.
Other handled things that aren't sharp. That's so smart. I would have gone straight to machetes.
Well, probably not a good thing to do.
Okay. It is September 16th at 11 a.m. at School of the Arts, Black Box Theater. Can you create? Can you create an entirely new generation of vaudeville fans?
We certainly hope so. We're a show that's for all ages. So the young and the young of heart from 5 to 105, I think everyone there will have a good time.
Now, can I just pop in and say one thing about Flower City Vaudeville?
Yeah.
Flower City Vaudeville has been with Fringe since day one. And I believe you started because of Fringe, because of Rochester Fringe Festival. They joined and formed a group. And they've gone on to great success elsewhere, including winning awards at the Ithaca Fringe. So you're a great example of what a Fringe Festival can do for an arts community.
Thank you, Erica. Yes, our whole existence is when we heard about the Fringe Fest, we started calling around and said, we should go and do this. And we put in a show and somebody had the bad decision-making policy to bring us in, and now they can't get rid of us.
Have fun on September 16th, 11 a.m., School of the Arts, the Black Box Theater, rochesterfringe.com for more information on Flower City Vaudeville. Thank you, Ted. And say hi to the other guys. Rich is a pretty regular email of the program, and he's a pretty smart guy.
Rich is a really
sort of surprisingly.
Smart guy. He's a retired machinist. If we need some prop built, he can make just about anything.
I believe it. Cool stuff. That's Ted Baumhauer, Flower City Vaudeville, rochesterfringe.com. It's our Fringe Festival preview. The Fringe Festival runs 14th through the 23rd of September. Producer Erica Fee is here with a cast of thousands. Let's get our only break of the hour, and you're going to meet a whole new crew of performers, creators, talent, from The Fringe, coming up. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on The Next Connections, we hope you join us in the live audience at the Little Theater. Connections broadcasting from the Little both hours as we get ready for Ken Burns' The Vietnam War. It's debuting next month on PBS and WXXI-TV. We'll talk to Vietnam veterans, people who were displaced by the war, the lessons of the Vietnam War, and much more. Join us at The Little Thursday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Want to let you know, as we get set for our second half hour, as we preview the Rochester Fringe Festival that is coming up. The KeyBank Rochester Fringe Festival is September 14th through the 23rd in many locations around our wonderful city here. I want to let you know that tomorrow, Connections is, well, it's always live. I keep doing this. Connections is live tomorrow. It's always live. But it's live with a live audience at the Little Theater. And both hours are on the subject of the Vietnam War. You might have heard that Ken Burns and Lynn Novick have a new documentary series called The Vietnam War coming to PBS and WXXI-TV next month, and we are going to have both hours dedicated to having conversations with Vietnam veterans, people who were displaced, looking at the legacy of the war and what we've learned. You can register. Please do this, because we'd love to see you tomorrow in the audience, and we'd love to hear from you. You can join the conversation there, WXXI.org/Vietnam. I'll do that again, WXXI.org/Vietnam. We would love to have you in the audience Thursday with us, both hours, noon to 2. But register first so we know you're coming, because there's lots of seats, but you know, we want to make sure we know exactly who's going to be there, so we've got seats for everyone. So please do that, and we will see you tomorrow. All right, Erica Fee is with us, the producer of the KeyBank Rochester Fringe Festival. And before we meet another round of interviewees here, who's somebody who is not here today in the studio? You couldn't bring everybody in. What's one place or one show or one person who that stands out to you that couldn't be here on Connections today that people should go see at the Fringe?
Well, probably our biggest show this year, which is Plasticien Volant. That's the huge, giant inflatables show that will be occurring at Parcel 5 on September 15th and 16th, totally free to the public. Plasticien Volant has performed worldwide. This is part of their U.S. premiere tour. People may recognize them from seeing them as in the opening ceremonies of the Sochi Olympics. They were also the Rio Olympics. So it's a major coup that we're bringing them to Rochester. And they can't be here today because they're in France, and some of them are actually having their U.S. embassy interviews today, so in order to get their work visas. So they definitely can't be here, but they'll be here very soon. And I know that many of the inflatables have already arrived.
I've never interviewed someone from an embassy. If you could have hooked us up today, so that's a little bit of a letdown.
Sorry about that.
But we'll see them September 15th and 16th.
Yes.
And what else is on the menu for either interactive stuff, fun stuff that, again, we couldn't have right here in studio today, but anything else stand out? Well, anything. Everything stands out.
Yeah, sure. Else? Right. Exactly. How do you choose? So aside from Plastic and Volant, we also have a Spiegel tent that we're bringing again this year. We have a fantastic adult modern circus show called Cirque de Fringe. Again, this year it's called Eclectic Attraction. We also have some shows for kids for matinees of that same show. We have The Bicycle Men, which is a comedy show that was a huge hit at the Edinburgh Fringe and the New York Fringe. It had a totally sold out run in London. That will be happening in the Spiegel Tent. Silent Disco again this year, a disco for kids. We also are bringing in a 40-foot inflatable igloo, you know, as you do, that will live for 10 days across from the Eastman Theater, right near the Spiegel Tent. That will be a sound experience. And we have our shows that are happening in park cars again this year. We have a Spiegel Tent send-up show that's happening in almost like a garden tent. And then we have a breakdancing and hip-hop dance competition the second weekend of the festival. That will happen on Gibb Street. So do you have your team ready? It's 3 versus 3.
Three versus three.
And you have two other people?
Yes.
Limbered up.
I would need three other people.
Yeah. Okay.
all of it on RochesterFringe.com. Silent disco is what some people would prefer for that entire genre, but others would love it. So what's the deal with silent disco?
Silent disco is a phenomenon. We were the first ones in Rochester to do it. When you walk into a silent disco, I have to say the first time I walked into a silent disco was at the Edinburgh Fringe, and I thought, oh my gosh, this is going to be the worst night of my life, because I suddenly saw a bunch of people dancing to seemingly nothing. But I was given a pair of headphones. You slip on the pair of headphones. There are three channels on these headphones. And then you can see immediately there are three rival DJs. And you can swap in between channel A, channel B, channel C. And at that point, you can see that people are dancing to actual music. So it's just a really fun night that happens late night in the Spiegel Tent.
And when it comes to shows and park cars, how many times now over the years at Rochester Fringe has someone called the police because they saw something happening in a car and they were worried about the content of what was happening?
That would be every year. Yeah.
It really does. I think it seriously does, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's fine because the police are often there, standing there enjoying the show themselves.
Yeah.
We did have someone shout out at us 2 years ago, "What's wrong with you people?" That's the problem with people nowadays. You stand by and watch and do nothing. As security stood
You see
there,
what's happening in that car.
A group of people. But yes, they are shows in parked cars. They're 10-minute shorts. Unfortunately, there are already totally sold out.
They always are by the time we get on this program.
Yeah, we might have to add some extra shows. In fact, we already have added extra shows, so we have to see if we can add even more.
Well, the Rochester Police Department, well-versed in shows and parked cars for the Fringe Festival. RochesterFringe.com. Mason Winfield is with The Shapeshifters Are Out, more supernatural tales from Native American tradition in Western New York. Welcome to the program. How are you?
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
That's September 15th, 10 p.m. at Writers and Books. Tell us about the show.
Well, I'm a supernatural guy, and I interview countless people a year about their alleged supernatural experiences.
Thank you for saying alleged.
And by now, I've picked up quite a few interesting stories. People always ask me, what's the scariest story you got? What's the scariest story? I always tell them, the scariest material is either that involving children or the Native Americans. And over the years, I've picked up quite a few supernatural stories from the Iroquoian, the Longhouse people. And that's what the storytelling session's about.
Okay. And so for those who haven't been out to experience something like this, you know, it's storytelling, but what's the setting? What's the vibe? What's it feel like?
Well, I have a great time. It's, yeah, I think I'm brilliant. The folklore is from the Genesee Valley, and it's historic and even prehistoric. It's traditional tales told by the Longhouse people. It's contemporary experiences, because we're living on Native American territory. And a lot of times when people call me up, it could be any ethnicity at all, and they got a ghost story, you know, Mace, I got a ghost. And okay, great. What did it look like? You know, things like that. And every once in a while, they're describing something that is suspiciously similar to what the Iroquois would have said. Oh yeah, you'll get those there. You're where the little people used to be. You'll get those. You know, yeah, there used to be a witch that lived there. Yeah, there's an old earthwork that used to be there, and the white guys tore it up, but people still see things.
Yeah. Are you a true believer?
Well, in what?
Are you believing that these experience people share come from drugs, come from...
Do I believe that they are 100%
yes.
valid? No.
Oh, okay.
Do I know the ones that are from the ones that aren't? No. So I tend to respect them. They are instances of exceptional human experience, EHE. And that's enough for a story.
Before I turn to our other guests, your voice already, you said you think you're brilliant. I think you might be. How do you become a great storyteller?
Oh, I think like almost any other, well, I'm not saying I am, but well, I think like any other.
I think we assume you are.
Well, I'm deeply flattered. It's like any other skill that anybody else has. I mean, we're going to be watching the U.S. Open tennis coming up, and we're going to see some wonderful athletes out there. There are wonderful athletes, potential athletes, walking the streets of Rochester who gets exposure and gets to practice and figures out what their gift is, and they get to do it. It's the same as any of the artists we've got. So,
and how long have you been doing it?
Well, I discovered I had a talent for evading consequences when I was about 5. So, yeah, I'd say at least.
I like that categorical description, evading consequences.
Yeah, if you get the reputation of being absolutely truthful when it doesn't count much, it comes in handy when it really does.
Mason Winfield, the shapeshifters are out. More supernatural tales from Native American tradition in Western New York. And that is September 15th, 10 p.m., at Writers and Books. Erica Fee, ticketed event, yes or no?
That's right. It's a ticketed event, and tickets are on sale now at rochesterfringe.com.
Rochesterfringe.com. We'll see you there. We'll have fun.
Thank you.
All right. That's Mason Winfield. Tina Chapman is with Diversity Theater. September 23rd, 1 p.m. at the Little Theater. Tina Chapman has Diversity Theater, and just the whole format I find totally fascinating. So why don't you kind of give our listeners who haven't had a chance to experience Diversity Theater an idea of what it is, and then I've got a lot that I want to ask you about.
Okay, great. And thank you, Evan, for the opportunity to be here.
It's great fun.
Oh, thank you. And represent RIT and meet all these wonderful presenters who are also here with me. Diversity Theater is a program that started at RIT about 2 years ago, in which our past Vice President for Diversity and Inclusion and I got together to talk about how do we use theater-based methods to help people talk about diversity and inclusion themes, to have more connections, and to also have a way of experiencing certain sensitive topics that sometimes people may have challenges with in terms of discussing. And we both had done some diversity consulting work, and I had done some work in the past with the Winters Group, for example, and Learn It Live, where we use theater-based methods. So it was a natural sort of progression to create this. So Diversity Theater was started about 2 years ago at RIT. It's in the Office for Diversity and Inclusion, very much supported by our past president, Dessler, where it was funded under him, and then now under our new president, Munson, who's here just starting this week. And with Diversity Theater, we have an opportunity to work with people to help them share not only their stories and experiences, but we do bystander awareness training. We do connections of being able to have lessons learned and tacit knowledge that we share back and forth through our experiences. And we also do other things, such as doing full productions, like Photograph 51. We did that as a Reader's Theater production about a year ago, and then another piece that I had written. But we use volunteers from our community inside and outside of the university to do provide the facilitation and the acting. And then this other component we do is the playback theater, and that's what we're doing for the Fringe.
And the playback theater consists of what?
Well, I'm glad you asked. Playback theater is a wonderful, powerful use of improvisational theater and musicians in order to enact stories shared by volunteers from the audience. And playback theater started in the 1970s, starting really from theater therapy and psychodrama, but it moved away from that and became more of a component that includes art and entertainment, social change or activism. And then also there's a ritual component to it because there is a form. You know, people learn how to do playback theater. And what it would look like is you would have a facilitator and you would have maybe three or four playback theater actors on stage and a musician who's like the fifth actor. And you ask volunteers from the audience to either share a one-word experience all the way up to maybe a particular story that they have about something that they experienced. And then it's enacted on the spot, on the stage, by the actors and the musician. And it is very powerful because it honors the teller by having someone listen not only to what happened, but also playing it back on stage. And it provides connections to the community because they're there sharing that story as well.
Are you asking for specific kinds of stories or kinds of categories of life experience when they share a story?
Well, that's a good question, because oftentimes playback theater is also done for workshops within organizations. So, for example, I worked with this troupe in Boston called True Story. We did playback theater for elder abuse. So we went into a elder community, asked for stories and experiences of elder abuse, and that was the theme. Another one was just a celebratory event. A group of women were coming together for an anniversary. They worked within union and labor unions, and they shared those stories. So what we're doing for the Fringe, we don't have a set theme for that one. The theme sometimes comes through based on those who are in the audience, because we are connected, just like in wireless networks, right? We can't see, you know, the waves that are going through, but they're really there and they provide connections. And that's what I believe. And that's why I love this show, Connections. So what we're going to do is start with sharing some common experiences of, for example, what brought you to Rochester, or maybe what brought you to the Fringe? What's been your experience at the Fringe? And sometimes it's just a one word, well, I feel excited, you know, I feel confused because there's so much. And we will reenact that. Even sometimes just those one words, there's different forms that we teach for playback theater that people will use to play those back. And then later we'll ask for a longer story, such as tell us about your first Fringe experience. And we'll get a chance to hear that and also hear the other perspectives there. So it's not just using improv and playing back someone's story. It's actually listening, honoring, and also pulling out those other voices that may be an inanimate object. It could be something that represents a symbol from their experience.
Certainly a different kind of improv than we often hear about. What's the key to doing improv well?
Oh, well, they'll say yes and, right? Yeah. They'll say you should listen and then be able to respond. I also teach acting for film at RIT, and I'd use a lot of improv in our exercises. And I'd say the main thing is to let go, to not always try to fill the space with your voice. To listen to your scene partner so you can authentically respond, and to trust yourself, because we have everything we need in order to do those types of actions. We don't have to be processing it all the time. Our arms already know how to move, right? Our mouth already knows how to speak when something comes through, regardless if you filter it or not. But either way, being in the moment and present.
You can see Diversity Theater, September 23rd at 1 p.m., at the Little Theater. It's part of the Rochester Fringe Festival. Erica Fee, are you an improviser? Have you ever done that?
Yes, I started as a classically trained actor, so I know all about playing truth.
And
yes,
how good absolutely. Of an improviser are you?
I didn't specialize in comedy, so I was more of a straight play actor.
Yeah, I'm awful too.
Yeah.
Oh, you should take my class.
We're signing up. Tina, thank you. And that is, again, rochesterfringe.com for all the details. But Diversity Theater is September 23rd, 1 p.m. at the Little Theater. I want to turn to Randall Conrad, who's got a drum. How are you, sir?
Doing well. How about you?
Very good. The name, is it Wodaiko?
Wodaiko, yes.
Wodaiko, which is what?
Wodaiko means drum, and taiko drum is traditional Japanese performance drumming.
Japanese performance drumming,
yes.
Which how did you arrive at this in your...
How did I personally?
Yeah.
Well, so other than the fact that I had a crush on one of the members, but other than that...
it's a love story.
Yes.
That's how most of these shows really start.
I love that. It's a Japanese drumming love story.
Yes, but other than that, I've always been like a big music person. Like I've played piano, trombone, ukulele, guitar. And I also really like these sort of like niche, unheard of things. And when I tell someone I play taiko drums, they have no idea what that is. So it's just another quality that I like to add to myself, because I think I like to strive for those sort of niche things, and I think RIT does too, where like they have things like a robot that makes hot dogs and s'mores, and Japanese performance drumming is just another thing that makes people be like, what is that?
Randall with his drum doing Wodeiko September 15th at 5 p.m. at the Little Theater.
Yes.
And you wanna do a little demo? Can you do a little demo? Is it demo-able?
I can hit the drum a little
bit.
Is
it super loud? Is it?
Yeah. I won't hit it as loud as possible.
But, okay, yeah, that's very kind. And this one you can actually keep a little bit away from the microphone.
Yes. And one thing that our president, Anne Isabel Tan, always tells people is that, like, you can hear taiko over, like, YouTube or the internet or wherever, but, like, being there and actually really experiencing it with the large drums and small drums and just feeling the vibrations is a big part of it.
So. Absolutely. No doubt this is the kind of thing that you can really commune with more live, but let's listen. Yes. Maybe you want to give us, like, 30 seconds or so?
I can really only hit it, like,
oh, I see. Go ahead. Yeah. Well, so tell us about the sound of it.
So we use two types of hits normally, where you hit on the face of the drum and it makes that noise, or you hit on the side of the drum to make a sort of click or tap noise. And we use those to really make the rhythms of our songs.
And how many people are we going to see performing?
I believe 5 or so, okay. Because one of our drums is actually broken, one of the heads of it.
Wow. So that is coming up here. Randall with his drum doing Wodeiko, September 15th, 5 p.m., at the Little Theater. And what are you hoping an audience takes from it? Not just enjoying the performance, but is this the kind of thing where you say, I've never heard of that and I want to learn more?
That's what we're really hoping for. We're really striving to find more members because we really are struggling on members right now, and we're hoping to get some freshmen at RIT and other members of the Monroe County community to join, and deaf members as well. We're really missing out on that. But we really want people to join in, like, experiencing it for themselves, because it's, like, it's a really good stress reliever, and it's just fun, and it's a good environment for everyone.
Plus, who likes to pick up women at bars? Get into Wodeiko, just like Randall did. Thank you. Thanks for being here. We'll see you at the Little Theater. Right, Erica Fee?
Yeah, right, exactly.
That's,
yeah.
Look at the Rochester Fringe.
There are two options, either bars.
Yeah, those are the two options for finding love, bars and Wodeiko.
Yep.
I want to thank Randall. Say hello to April Byam, who's the story chick, who's going to be doing the story chicking at the Spiegel Garden. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm doing a little bit more of an installation experience this year. So in the past, I've had performances at 3 prior Fringe festivals where I've shared stories that I've gathered from people around the city. And this year, what I'm doing is I'm putting the stories out there for people to stumble upon a little bit more.
All right. So back it up a little bit. Mm-hmm. If you don't know April and Story Chick, the brief explanation for what you do.
So Story Chick is all about gathering and sharing stories. I focus on the Rochester community and really with the purpose and the goal of using those stories to connect people, to show people how much we are alike, and that, you know, even if people's experiences are extremely different, that we're all kind of operating on the same themes and the same big stories in life.
I've been fortunate enough to hear April talk about how she became the story chick and why she does it, and I think it's important to ask you this. Mm-hmm. How people want someone who listens to them. And maybe today it's hard to get someone to do that when they're not on a cell phone or distracted. They still like being able to tell a story and have someone who's a great listener, don't they?
Definitely. So often I'll just be set up at the market gathering stories from people, and you know, I just have a poster and a sign that says, "Tell me your story." And so many people stop by and just start talking. You know, they don't need prompts. They don't need a theme necessarily. They just come and they start telling their stories. So the story booth at this festival is going to be focused on Fringe stories. But it gives people an opportunity to both hear stories and record their own.
Where are you online that they can learn more about you?
Storychick.wordpress.com and Facebook. As Story Chick.
Storychick.wordpress.com. And April's going to be in the Spiegel at the Spiegel Garden doing it September 14th through the 23rd. Every day, are you not there? Is there any day you're not there? You're there every day?
It's going to be there the entire time. It's obviously free and open for people to just walk in and tell a story.
All right, and the last quick question then before we lose the hour here. How do you decide what are your favorite stories or what you want to share from past conversations you've had?
Oh, man. I like the stories that have good twists and kind of some surprises in them. So, but also the stories that tug at emotions. So I fall in love with almost every story. But you know, there are some that are a little more run of the mill. But for the most part, people have really exciting and engaging stories, and I'm sure they will about Fringe.
Everybody has a story, don't they?
Oh, yes. Everybody has a story, and everybody's story is worth listening to and sharing.
At the Spiegel Garden, you can see April. Not the Spiegel Tent, the Spiegel Garden, which is, if you've never been down there, which is sort of crazy at this 6 years in, we've got about 30 seconds. Set that scene for us. What's it going to be like?
So Erica, right across from the Eastman Theater, we transformed that parking lot into an urban oasis, as we call it. So we have a Spiegel Tent, which is an imported Belgian music hall, basically. And then outside, we have landscaping. We even bring in turf and roll out turf so that there's a lovely place for you to sit. There's food trucks, bar, etc. And Story Chick will be there, along with the inflatable igloo, the car plays, and others.
RochesterFringe.com. 20 seconds. What did you miss? Did you miss anything this hour?
I don't think I missed anything aside from everything. We have so many performances. I would really suggest that people pick up a guide and start planning their Fringe now.
And where do they get the guides?
The guides are all listed online at RochesterFringe.com, all the different locations for pickup. They will be distributed through all the local papers in early September as well.
All right, September 14th through the 23rd, year number 6, 533 different performances. And how many venues?
In over 25 venues, so it's everything from parked cars to Kodak Hall at Eastman Theater.
More than 70,000 people are going to attend, and it's becoming a worldwide festival. Congratulations. Well, we'll wait till it's over. We'll see how it goes.
Thank you. That's right. Yeah, pat me on the back then.
Thank you, Erica Fee, the producer, and the person behind the Fringe Festival. Thanks to all of the wonderful guests sharing their talent stories and a preview of what you can experience at the Fringe this year. Have a great afternoon. We'll see you live at the Little Theater. Join us in the audience tomorrow. See you then.